Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 70, Did You Bring the Hummus Podcast. I'm Kimberly, your host, and I'm super excited to be here with you today. Did You Bring the Hummus is a podcast to help you go vegan. Most importantly, we'll talk about how to embrace this meaningful decision with fervor and fun. Episodes post every Monday on your favorite podcast app. Before we get started, I have one very important question for you. Did you bring the hummus? Today, I am joined by Michael Schwartz, founder and CEO of Treeline Cheese. Michael grew up in South Africa in a family of prominent opponents to the apartheid regime. It is there that he developed his sense of justice and fair play for all. He had always enjoyed fine European cheeses, but when he found out just how cruel the production of dairy products is, he decided that he had to try and change things. So he gave up dairy and his 25-year career as an intellectual property lawyer and turned his attention to making vegan cheese. Treeline was born in his kitchen over a decade ago. Michael started selling his new cheese door-to-door, trying to convince the stores to take a chance on what was then an unknown product. Treeline soon became a favorite at vegan markets and festivals. Treeline cheese is now available in thousands of stores nationwide, including Whole Foods, Sprouts, Wegmans, and many independents. It was recently named Best Vegan Cheese by TastingTable.com, TheDailyMeal.com, and USA Today, which, fun little side note, I was one of the experts on the panel for USA Today that created the list those voters voted from. This conversation gets deep, and Michael does not shy away from the honesty this world so badly needs right now. We discuss integrity in business, how to spend our dollars effectively to move the vegan market forward, and where we might be fueling the opposite, how kosher labels on vegan products tell a story, and a beautiful story about sharing hummus. Hi, Michael. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me.
As I start every episode of Did You Bring the Hummus, I'd love to hear about your vegan journey.
Sure. Do you want me to start at the very beginning or
wherever you want?
Halfway through?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think like a lot of people, it started with being vegetarian. And the decision to be vegetarian came after I I was living in Texas, and I consider myself to be an animal lover, and I used to go and walk dogs at the animal shelter, and you know, I really felt like I was very attached to animals. And so but one day I thought to myself, well, wait a second, how can you be walking these dogs and taking care of animals and saying you really love them when you're eating them? And so I just started thinking about it, and I realized that your life, or anyone's life, is the sum of all the things you do in your life. And if you do things that are inconsistent with your beliefs, that means, one, that your practice is hypocritical and inconsistent, and then also the actual effect that you have is nothing. Okay, because it's easy to think things, and thoughts have no real impact on anything unless you do something. And if you're thinking one thing and doing something different, that thought has no meaning. So you're in essence living a lie. And I sort of took myself through this mental exercise and came to the conclusion that I could not continue to eat meat. And this was a long time ago, long before the internet. And I had this nagging thought about dairy. But I kept putting that aside because I said, well, they don't kill the cows, so dairy isn't inherently wrong the way meat is, because you're eating the corpse of an animal. And I then started getting more information. And as the when the internet arrived, information started getting around really quickly. And I then realized that I just couldn't justify eating dairy or eggs based on how I felt about eating meat. Because I realized that I was living in denial about them not killing the cows. Well, they definitely kill the cows because no one wants a cow that can't give milk. Mm-hmm. They kill their calves because no one wants male dairy calves.
Right.
And, you know, so I also found out about what goes on with eggs and how they kill all the male chicks. And it just didn't make any sense to me to continue to have dairy and eggs in my life. So I stopped.
Yeah. It's powerful stuff, right? And I think the egg industry and the dairy industry has done such a good job of making us think that it's not as bad, because there's so many, even when I was, because I was vegetarian for a long time before I went vegan too. And every vegetarian I've ever met, their first thought was, why isn't this good enough? Of course it's okay. Like they're not, it's not really that bad. And now, of course, like you said, we've got the internet and it's really easy to find out the truth. And, you know, the baby chicks, what are they, the boy chicks live a few hours, if that, before they're ground up. We didn't know that back then before the internet or when the internet was new.
Yeah. Well, I think people knew it. It was just very difficult to get the information out. And the animal industries had more money and therefore more access to the media.
Yeah.
Could present this picture that was just completely false. And, you know, I often get into these somewhat pointless discussions where people go, well, I get my milk from the farmer down the road and he's so nice to his cows. And I go, well, what happens to the male cows? Where do they go? And amazingly enough, a lot of the farmers themselves almost live in denial, because in a strange way, they actually do love the cows. And they somehow justify at the end of their useful life sending them off to the slaughterhouse and killing the males and separating the males from their mothers. And it's a kind of a, I don't know how one gets into that. You can see it every day of your life, but become so kind of hardened to it. I don't know.
Just considering the day-to-day, not the deathy part of it all, but I wonder if farmers see it where they think they're like in, there's like a, is the word symbiosis I'm looking for? I can't think of the word exactly, but they think that like the cow gives us milk and we give her love and food and she has shelter. And so we're in this together and she doesn't need all this milk because, you know, of so many, how many people have I heard say that they didn't know that a cow even had to be pregnant to give milk? Yeah. So, you know, they're,
maybe their parents should have taught them a little bit about
bees. Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, a cow's a mammal. I can kind of see how that goes. But I think, yeah, that they can kind of get just stuck in this idea that we help her, she helps us, we need her milk to nourish us. And they get latched onto that, and then they don't acknowledge and can separate, because how painful must that be if you have to think about every single day sending these animals that you've spent even just a little time with just off to their very early deaths.
Look, I can see your point on this, because I grew up in South Africa, and at that time there was institutionalized racism, and Black people were really treated, I wouldn't say even as second class citizens, they were just not regarded as fully human. And people came up with all kinds of justifications as to why that was okay. And then they became used to it, and it went on for years and years, and then it became the norm. And the worst part of it, in my opinion, is it then becomes the norm for the victim. And the victim can't see what life could be like without this oppression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, so I was sort of vegan for quite some time. And I'll tell you one of the things that really pushed me over the edge on this was I used to go and work at this farm animal sanctuary. And there was a male dairy calf that was living there. He'd been rescued from a dairy farm.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, I was just patting him and, you know, scratching his head and whatever you do with cows.
Yeah.
And then I went off to go and do something else. And later in the day, I walked past him and he grabbed me by the shoulder to pull me back because he wanted me to play with him some more. And I remember this so clearly. You know, it was a cold day in winter in upstate New York. And I just remember this cow going, come on, play with me. And then I just went, okay,
mm-hmm.
enough now. It's you can't, you these are like dogs. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to some farm animal sanctuaries and I really love, I'm actually wearing a farm sanctuary hoodie yeah. tonight. And the joy that you can see on the animals' faces and the video, like you can find videos on their Instagram and their Facebook pages where the cows are, they're jumping, they're running, they're playing with a ball and they do uh-huh. interact with humans in very much the way that we would say, my dog plays with me like this. Yeah. It is an incredible connection to make. And so powerful. So
yeah, I think those sanctuaries serve a very important purpose because people like me will go to them and suddenly have this sort of epiphany and mm-hmm. And that's sort of where my company Treeline comes in because people have these emotional attachments to their food.
Yeah.
And once a person makes the emotional connection between the abuse of animals and food, they want to fill that need, that emotional need again. And that's, you know, why I think people who run companies making vegan substitutes for animal products are so important. And you know, we're trying to make a living out of it, but we at least part of it is that cause of helping animals by providing alternatives.
Yes. Yeah. So what made you choose cheese?
I chose cheese because I like to eat cheese. Mm-hmm. And I was brought up eating really good cheese. As a lawyer, I spent a lot of time with clients in France and Italy, and I'd go over there and we'd have these really amazing dinners and I would tell them, oh, I'm vegetarian. And then the cheese would come out and I got to tell you, it was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
When I decided I didn't want to have dairy anymore, I did miss eating cheese and I just decided this is the sort of the hump that people have to get over is cheese in order mm-hmm. to be vegan. That's the big one. Eggs, yeah, you can live without eggs. I've never felt particularly attached to eggs.
Mm-hmm.
But cheese is a different story altogether.
Yep. Yeah. Cheese is what kept me vegetarian for as long as I was. It is so addictive and easy too. Right. So even if you, like anywhere you go, you want to go out to eat, you're at a party, you're at an amusement park, at the movies, like you can be a vegetarian and eat cheese anywhere. Crappy cheese, really delicious cheese. There's so many options and it's so easy and it's super addictive and everybody loves it. And So yeah, there was, it's almost like for some people, I've talked with others who cheese was, they called themselves cheesetarians, right? I definitely would have put myself in that category, where there's almost like a mourning period because there is an emotional connection to the food, and there's the sensation of the cheese in your mouth and the flavors, and you know, everybody loves pizza, and there's so much there. So I love that you were like, yeah, this is where to go with this. So tell me about Treeline. How'd you start? Yeah.
I started just a few feet from where I'm sitting now. I'm sitting in my dining room and I started in my kitchen.
Nice.
And I really just started experimenting with different nuts. And I pretty quickly realized that cashew nuts were the best nut to make cheese out of. And I started culturing them. I'd seen a few YouTube videos from like real weirdos who were making vegan cheese in their kitchens. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. And those weirdos actually had some pretty good ideas. They didn't have a good way of making it commercially. They could make something that would last a week in the fridge and tasted fantastic, but that was it. And that really was the hard part, is to, one, make a product that doesn't go bad quickly, and two, get it out into the market. That's something that's extremely difficult.
What was the first cheese that you made successfully and you were like, this is going to be a thing?
It was a sort of semi-hard cheese that was it was the predecessor to the what we call the classic aged cheese that we sell at the moment.
Okay.
And there's also a classic an aged cracked pepper cheese. So it's something you could slice or you can grate it onto pasta or something like that. And that was the key. But after that, I decided I wanted to make something that didn't have to be aged. And that's how I came up with the so-called French style cheese, which is a soft cheese. And that is made basically in a matter of hours rather than weeks. And that was actually an afterthought, but is actually the most important product for us.
Yeah. Your cheeses are really good.
Thank you.
The first one I had was a spreadable. I had gotten it at, I think, Woodstock Farm Sanctuary.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, it must have been they had just gotten it in, because it also came, if you bought like a certain number of cheeses, you got a little yellow Treeline cheese bag. Yeah.
Maybe I sold it to you.
Maybe. But, I wish I thought to pull that out.
I do appreciate any compliments on the cheese, but I want to say something that's going to be a bit controversial, and that is, there are a lot of new brands of vegan cheese that are being made by very large companies, and they just aren't that good. And they aren't very good for you either. They're full of saturated fat. And the vegan market generally has taken a bit of a blow since COVID. And the sales are just not what people expected them to be. I personally think that's partly due to the fact that people are so disappointed in these mass market cheeses. Mm-hmm. And the cheeses that are widely available in supermarkets are what the general non-vegan public considers vegan food to be. And for that reason, I think they're actually hurting as much as they're helping, maybe more.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone who really likes dairy cheese and who doesn't really care about cows is going to pick the vegan version over the dairy version.
Right.
Whereas I believe, and maybe I'm delusional about this, but I believe that non-vegans who taste tree lion go, wow, I could eat this. This is, mm-hmm. you know, it's not the same as anything I've been eating before. It's different and it's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas these mass market starch and coconut oil type cheeses, yeah. people go, well, it's trying to be what I already like. So why would I buy this?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my view on where capitalism is taking the vegan cheese business. And I'm going to be speaking out about it a little bit more because I just don't think it's helping matters.
You know, as a consumer who doesn't make food and I'm not in that space, you know, when I walk into a standard grocery store and there's these huge sections of different types of vegan options, cheeses and the meats, and it's exciting. But yeah, then you look at the labels and they're full of ingredients that you can't pronounce. And like you said, loaded in fats, saturated fats. And then you take them home and you're thinking, well, this is new and there's been so much innovation in this space. This should melt just like I should be able to get stringy cheese out of this. And it falls flat. And then, yeah, you think about, what if I were to serve this to somebody who was thinking like, she's going to introduce me to vegan food.
Yeah.
And then they have it and they're like, no way.
Yeah. It confirms in their minds that vegans are crazy mm-hmm. and that we don't really like food.
Yeah. And so not also, true.
You know, how many times have you had someone say to you, where do you get your protein? Okay. And then you look at the sliced vegan cheese and it has zero protein.
Mm.
And they go, well, why would I do this?
Yeah.
Why, you know, I not everybody is able to put their feelings about animal rights ahead of their own need to eat foods.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people believe that we should eat animal products. And those people, when they taste some of these substitutes, just go, well, this confirms it. You know, this confirms, why would I ever be vegan? Just doesn't make any sense. Plus, it's more expensive. So,
you know. Yep. Yeah. They're not thinking about, well, this dairy cheese that I'm buying is, you know, so much of this is subsidized by the government. There's lobbyists behind this. There's this whole machine that gets this food into the grocery stores for them to buy. And yeah, when they're looking at a block of, you know, dairy cheese mozzarella, that's $5.49, and a block of vegan mozzarella, that's twice that much. If they don't have that emotional connection, they are just going to buy one, the one they're familiar with, and two, you know, the less expensive one. Why would they spend that extra if there's no reason in their mind to do that?
Yeah, and particularly when, I mean, even if they were the same price,
yeah,
when one just doesn't taste as good as the other. That's a real problem.
And mm-hmm.
I mean, I try really hard to make products that will satisfy people and where they taste them and go, this is really nice. This is,
yeah.
Instead of, well, I suppose I could eat this, you know. I can tell you, we've in developing new products, I've had my team come to me with a product and I taste it and they taste it and we go, well, this is okay. Mm. And then I go, well, then we're not going to sell it. Okay is not good enough.
Yeah.
Everybody has to go, wow, this is amazing. And I've got products that have basically been completely abandoned because they just didn't make people excited when they ate them.
Yeah. That's, I mean, for me as like, again, from that consumer perspective, I love that because if I know that that's the motivation every day, you know, at Treeline Cheese, then every time I pick up tree line cheese, I know that I'm going to be happy with it. I'm going to be satisfied. And then I'll go back and I'll buy more next time.
Look, we can't please everybody. There's always going to be somebody who just says, well, this is not for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, you can go to the best restaurants in town and the chef makes something he thinks is amazing. You eat it and you go, well, that just wasn't that good. And
yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing I can do about that, but I'd at least put a very high priority on doing everything we can to make it as delicious as it possibly can be.
Mm-hmm. And there's, I know that you also have strong feelings behind the, obviously the quality of the ingredients that go into your cheese. But when we first met, you even mentioned the difference in cashews and where they come from and the distance that they're trucked in order to get. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the most cashews in America come from Vietnam, and Vietnam is the biggest producer of cashews, but not the biggest grower. Mm. That sounds a little strange, but what happens is the cashews are grown in West Africa and shipped to Vietnam for processing because the labor in Vietnam is so cheap. Mm. So after they process, they are then shipped to the United States as Vietnamese cashew nuts. Now, there are some cashew plantations in Vietnam. So it's not that they produce zero, but they process a lot more than they produce. Mm. And it's an extra several thousand miles. I did the calculation a while back and I've forgotten the actual number, but if you just picture the map from West Africa going around the southern tip of Africa, across the Indian Ocean, into the Pacific, to Vietnam, to unload the ship, truck the nuts to wherever the processors are, truck them back, put them on another ship, and then go in the other direction to the ports of, you know, Long Beach, and then truck them across to New York or go through the Panama Canal and up the East Coast to New York. It's just ridiculous. And unfortunately, that's the majority of cashews in America have that carbon footprint.
Wow.
So I decided that I would source our cashews as close as possible. So we get them from Brazil, which is a straight shot of just a few days by sea to the US, or from West Africa. And then there's another factor, and that is in Vietnam, they process these nuts by hand because they're starting to change over to mechanical processing, but because people are so poor and so desperate for work, they are willing to process these nuts, which have a layer of this very nasty, like a tar around them. And the people who process cashew nuts end up with permanent black staining and burns on their hands from this. And again, when I started the company, I decided it's not good enough to say, well, I'm vegan, but, you know, I don't care about these people. So we only get cashew nuts from processors that do this mechanically using machinery. We don't get our nuts from these hand processing facilities. I think that's an important part of the whole picture because, we always get criticized by some people. Oh, you vegans only care about animals. You don't care about people.
I was having that thought that, we hear that so often, and here's proof that, we do care about people.
Yeah. And I don't see why we wouldn't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Even thinking about the factory farming, we want to shut down factory farming. Yes. Because billions of animals are abused and murdered. The people who work in those places are suffering as well. And if we can take that peace out of the system, we remove the suffering from the people and the animals involved.
Well, a lot of the meatpacking jobs in America are done by immigrants from very poor countries. And recently, one of the major meat packers got into trouble for using child labor. They were sending, literally, I'm not exaggerating, 12-year-olds into slaughterhouses to clean up after the slaughter. And some of these kids got injured by the blades. They, I don't know what happened. They slipped or something. Yeah. But can you imagine taking a kid and making the kid work in that appalling environment of blood and bits of animals lying around? And, you know, even if you're not vegan, you've got to say that's not right. That's you can't treat children like that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. My heart is breaking.
They were making them work. Firstly, that was illegal to employ them. Then they were making them work out of hours. So they were working at night. So, yeah, you're right. It's the people who work in these places suffer. And it would be nice if they didn't have to, because I guarantee that there's not one person working a slaughterhouse who wakes up and says, I'm so looking forward to going to work today.
Right. Oh, gosh. I love being vegan. I love it. It is the greatest decision I've ever made in my entire life. But my goodness, is it painful sometimes? You know? Oh.
Well, you've made a choice, which is not the easy choice. And you just, you go with that because the alternative is worse.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
One of my friends said to me, oh, you've got such willpower to be vegan. And I said, no, I'd have to have willpower to eat meat.
Yeah.
Because I can't do that.
Agreed. I'm really thankful that you not only are putting that much thought and care into the products that you're creating and the company that you're running, but that you're willing to talk about it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a tough job. I really would not recommend to anyone to just go into the food business because they love food. It's a really tough business. And, you know, it's nice to get this feedback from you, and it makes it worthwhile when people, you know, are happy with the product, and it changes things in some way. But on a day-to-day basis, a very difficult job. Not as hard as being in a slaughterhouse, for sure.
Right. But there's another thing you mentioned that I thought was really interesting. When we had our initial call, and you talked about the kosher symbols that are on some vegan products, and kind of the message that we should be picking up on as vegans when we see that. Can you explain what you mean by that? And if I got any of that wrong, also correct me.
Okay. Yeah. The kosher symbols definitely tell a story. Now, I'm Jewish, so I decided that I would make tree line kosher, and I don't really bother with being kosher because I'm vegan, right? Okay. But there are really, for those people who don't know the laws of kashrut, you're not allowed to mix milk and meat, right? So there's a class of kosher that's just generally kosher. And then there's a class of kosher, which I consider to be the more special class, which is called parva, which means it can be eaten with meat or milk. It's neither meat nor milk, right? So our products are all kosher parva, and that's because we don't make any dairy products, obviously, in our factory. They've never been exposed. The equipment's never been exposed to dairy. But if you look carefully at some of the kosher certifications, so for example, you'll see a symbol and then underneath it'll say D, the letter D,
mm-hmm.
or it'll say the letters DE, or it'll just say dairy. And what these mean are that the plant, if it has says kosher D, it means the plant that's making that also processes dairy.
Okay.
And the certifying authority has not accepted that it's dairy free. Okay. The DE means it was made on equipment that is also used for dairy. So the kosher, this to me, this it's quite controversial amongst very religious Jews, but it's equipment that has been exposed to dairy and is shared with dairy. So if you're very religious, you would never eat kosher D or kosher DE with meat, because that would be taboo.
Okay.
And the reason why this is relevant to vegans is that a lot of the larger vegan cheese companies have kosher D or kosher DE certifications, which means they are made in dairy plants. And I'm not that precious that I won't go to a restaurant that's not 100% vegan. And so the plate may have touched milk or meat, but I still eat in the restaurant. I'm not that worried about it. But what does worry me is that we by buying vegan food are actually paying dairy plants and keeping the lights on in the dairy plants.
Yeah.
That's the part that worries me, because one day of the week they're making brand X cream cheese for a dairy company, and the next day they're making the vegan version. What if they didn't have the vegan version? Who would be there? They would have a problem. So they're sort of keeping the lights on by giving them additional business.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure people will argue and say, look, it's good that these dairy plants are being used for something other than dairy. And it's a slow process where eventually they'll be totally non-dairy. But the fact is that the dairy is not going away anytime soon. I'd like it to, but it isn't. And we've seen a lot of dairy companies have a lot of financial problems because they're getting hit by the plant-based milks. And then along come all these these vegan cheese companies going, well, here's some more money.
Yeah.
So this troubles me. I can tell you, it troubles me.
Yeah. You know, we talk so much in the vegan movement about voting with our dollars. But if we don't know about these little things, then we think, I'm buying this vegan cheese. I'm showing these companies that this is what I want. I'm showing the grocery store, stock more of this because this is what I'm buying. But then you look a little further down the road and you're like, oh, I've paid, like you said, to keep the lights on at this processing plant that also processes dairy.
Yeah. I think that there are two sides to this argument for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I will say that I just was recently in Whole Foods and I picked up a well-known brand of vegan sour cream. And I turned it on its side and there was a little symbol that said certified vegan. And next to it, it said kosher dairy.
Ah.
Now, I mean, what does that mean?
Right.
I just don't know. I assume they put the two next to each other to balance so that the vegan would balance out the kosher dairy. But did some inspector go in and have a look at this dairy plant and say, okay, well, it's vegan enough? I don't know. I don't know the answer to this.
Yeah. And you know, these inspectors, how much do they know about veganism, or how much time are they spending to really understand how much cross-contamination is happening? And by the way, I also think that you sharing this knowledge is also really important for people who have allergies, any food allergens, to understand that, you know, you think you're buying a vegan cheese that's completely free of dairy milk, and it should be, but if it's used on that same, you know, processing, in that same processing plant, and it happens you got the batch from that very first run, if it wasn't, you know, like, there's a chance there's a lot more allergens in there.
Yeah, look, that's beyond my area of expertise. So yeah, I just mine don't too. Know how many molecules
yeah.
are enough. But look, I will say that the people who I've met who do this vegan certification, who are vegans, take this very seriously.
Okay.
So I don't have any doubts about them, but mm-hmm. not all the vegan certification is done by vegans. And I think there isn't a consensus on what is and is not really certifiable. Whereas, and even look, amongst Jews, there's no consensus on what's kosher. So, you know, it's no surprise that people have very strong opinions about these things.
What do we do? You know, I can kind of see it from two perspectives, right? If I'm only buying things from small vegan companies, am I sending that same message? Where if I'm always buying from the large dairy industry that now has a soy milk product, and I'm always buying that soy milk, and I tell everybody, buy this soy milk, so this company sees, like, hey, the soy milk is actually selling better than the dairy milk. And maybe eventually they just switch over and sell soy milk, and they branch out into cashew milk or almond milk, or like, what are your thoughts on where we spend our dollars, knowing how complex this whole thing is?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm self-serving here, because I'd like people to spend their dollars on my mm-hmm. tree line cheese that's made in a completely vegan plant.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't get it into every store in the entire country. And I would say that if you are trying to be vegan and your only option is to go and buy cheese that has kosher D on it, buy that cheese. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. It's a lot better than buying the dairy version.
Right.
You know, giving up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say just wherever possible, try to spend your money where you feel it's going to do the most good. Okay. And that's a very personal decision, as mm-hmm. you know, it's based on your own personal priorities. My personal view on this is there's another factor on it that's also quite troubling, and that is if dairy companies start making vegan products, and if they force out the smaller vegan companies, they effectively will silence the voices for animal rights.
Mm.
And then they can virtue signal to the public, oh, we have this plant-based product, we have a plant-based alternative, while at the same time making sure that that alternative's never really going to take over.
Yeah.
And no company that's doing this virtue signaling is going to allow its plant-based division to expose the cruelty in their factories, or to support, for example, a charity that exposes that cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I don't have a hell of a lot of money to give to charities, but we work with Farm Sanctuary, with Mercy for Animals. We have with animal, what's it called? just forgotten his name, Farm USA, Farm Animal Rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all of these organizations are constantly exposing the cruelty of the dairy industry. If Treeline were a division of a dairy company, that would stop.
Yeah.
And that's something for consumers to think about, is if you are vegan because you really want to bring about change, don't let the vegan business fall into the hands of the companies that exploit animals. We have to keep these little businesses alive to keep the movement going.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you. Yeah, I see. I'm in a lot of local vegan Facebook groups. And someone posted about it today, about another small vegan cafe that had closed. And, you know, how heartbreaking it is to see these businesses not make it. And then they commented about how there's so many people that will then comment, oh, I'm so sad that they closed. I haven't been there in years, but I loved their food. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's why they closed, because we're not going. Why are we not going to these places? And it is exciting, you know, when these larger companies have a new vegan option on their menu, or, you know, they're pushing out vegan products. But yeah, as people who are motivated to change the world, you're right, we're not going to do it through these companies, exactly what you said, that are able to silence that voice and make sure that the images of cruelty are hidden and not to be spoken of and shown. And
imagine that instead of talking to me on this podcast, you were talking to the head of the cheese division of the vegan cheese division of Kraft. And you started asking him about it. So what happens to the dairy cows?
Right.
That conversation is not going to last very long.
Mm-mm.
Or she is going to go back to the office the next day and have, you know, be told he's fired.
Yeah.
You can't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, I mean, imagine this. One of the biggest, I call it fake meat producers, is owned by a Canadian meatpacking company.
Mm-hmm.
They operate slaughterhouses, or at least contract slaughterhouses. Is the president of that division going to get up and talk about child labor in those slaughterhouses? No.
No.
And I would personally like to start a movement of vegans who really, really are thinking about their decisions. And I mean, one of my frustrations is that when these new products come out from these big companies, they get all over the press, and the vegan press takes them up as well.
Yeah.
And the vegan press doesn't understand that these companies will crush the small businesses, mm-hmm, and silence those voices.
Yeah. I am seeing so many posts from, like, I could see it in my head of all of those, like, yeah, check out this vegan option at this place and this new vegan cheese. And it is almost like, what are you doing? Why are we not, why is Treeline not getting a huge post in, you know, Veg News on their Instagram? You know, like, why is the Impossible Whopper at Burger King getting like, hey, here's the vegan options when you're out and about and don't have too many, you know, you're around fast food? Like, I don't, and even pushing celebrities who go vegan, like, you know, Kim Kardashian, there were so many different vegan outlets that were like, Kim Kardashian, you know, shows us around her vegan pantry. I was like, Kim Kardashian is not vegan. And she has admitted that. She never said, I'm vegan. Sometimes she said, I eat vegan. And then she's prancing around in a fur stole. So it's a.
And I promise you, every single product in that pantry, she got money to put in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah. And these celebrities and these companies that are being pushed, they don't need that push. They have billions or millions of dollars. Maybe I'm exaggerating now. I'm getting all fired up. They have millions of dollars in their marketing budget. You know, like they don't need the vegan sector to be giving them free advertising.
Yeah. Look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do believe that if the only vegan options food-wise are coming from McDonald's and Kraft, it the future of the vegan movement is in danger.
Yeah.
Because if they control that, and the image of veganism is McDonald's and Kraft, then it's just never going to address the problems, because they'll keep a complete a muzzle on any kind of criticism.
I'm so glad for this conversation. This is such an important thing that I think, and maybe I'm just not following the right people, or I'm not in the right groups, but I'm not hearing a lot about this right now. No. And we need to remember, like, we can do this. Like, being vegan in a non-vegan world is not easy. We already have made a decision to be different, to stand up, to speak for someone else, to do something that a lot of people aren't currently willing to do. So we need to keep doing that, and we need to spend the time to learn about the companies whose money, like, we're giving them our money, and change. Like, it's so meaningful to me to be vegan and make decisions within the construct of veganism. I think back of things that I used to love before I even went vegetarian, and I find out that, you know, company X does this and Y does that, and I'm just like, I'm done with that. And it's not difficult, because it's so meaningful to me. And those of us who are doing it because of the animals, because of this social justice movement that it is, like, we've got to get back into that. We can't leave that behind.
Yeah. And I think that we also have to look at ourselves critically. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. So Oatly milk, mm-hmm. is one of the most popular oat milks. And they definitely advocate for cows, and their marketing is full of stuff about, you know, cows and the environment and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, they just brought out a cream cheese, and it's made of palm oil.
Oh.
Okay. Now, I don't know why they had to do that. I mean, I do know. It's because it's cheap, and they can sell a product that's cheap. But I don't believe that vegans should be supporting that. And we have to say, look, Oatly, we really like you. We love the oat milk, but come on.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. They're big enough. They have other options. They don't have to go that route.
Yeah, for sure.
And people will pay for it. I know that there is a lot of, you know, food is getting more and more expensive, and people are struggling and they have to make choices. But there's also, when you have the ability to make the choice and you want the thing that's good, you can buy something, you know, you'll buy the Oatly palm oil free cream cheese, right, for a few dollars more. And then maybe, I don't know, you save on some other product.
I can tell you, Tree Lines cream cheese is not more expensive than Oatly.
Ah.
But,
okay.
You know, we don't have the marketing power. So, there's a good chance that they will keep us out of a lot of stores, because it's another little secret that the public doesn't know, is that a lot of supermarkets charge the manufacturers to be on the shelf. Mm. So you if Tree Line shows up to supermarket X and they go, okay, we've got 500 stores and we need a check from you for $25,000 to be in the stores. And it's not, I'm not talking about this as if it's some under the table thing. It's all completely in the open. It's perfectly legal. But it means that small companies just cannot get into these stores. And we get emails from people and messages on social media, you know, why aren't you in Albertsons? Why aren't you in Safeway? Mm-hmm. And we go, well, we'd love to be, but we can't.
Right. I've heard before about the products that are at your eye line, and then the above and below are always like the, you know, so there, I feel like some of us must know that like people have to pay to be there, but maybe it isn't as, I don't know, but so where can, more importantly, I'll just let that go because I don't know where I'm going with it. More importantly, how do people buy Tree Line Cheese? Where can they find it?
So we're in Whole Foods, in just about every Whole Foods in the country. And I have to say this about Whole Foods. A lot of people complain, but Whole Foods has given a lot of businesses like mine a chance.
Mm.
We would not exist without them. And I honestly, I hope someone from Whole Foods is listening, because
me too.
They really do help. And I owe a lot to Whole Foods for really giving us a chance when we were totally unknown. Mm. And so that's an important one. Sprouts is an important one for us. We've only more recently in Sprouts. We only have vegan goat cheese in Sprouts.
Ah.
And then there are a lot of chains all over the country that are smaller chains by national standards, where, you know, they have 20 stores or 10 stores or 30 stores. We're mm-hmm. in a lot of those, like Wegmans, for instance.
Okay.
Wegmans is a really, really well-run business, and we're very, it's a prize to be in Wegmans, so that's a good one. And then we're also in lots of little standalone health food stores. And then online, we sell on our e-commerce site.
Okay. And you're located in upstate New York, right?
Yeah.
So can you ship to someone on the West Coast?
Yeah, we can ship just about anywhere.
Okay.
Shipping perishables is quite expensive, so there's a minimum order to get free shipping.
Okay.
But yeah, we can ship anywhere.
Awesome. Michael, this conversation has been amazing, and my listeners are definitely going to learn a lot when they hear it. So I've got one more question for you.
Okay. I'm ready.
Tell me about your favorite hummus or your favorite way to eat hummus.
Okay. So, there's a sort of a nice aspect to this, and that is, I have a house up in upstate New York, and I'm Jewish, as I said earlier, and my neighbor is a Muslim Arab from Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
and he makes the best hummus. He and I are very good friends, partly over food, because he's also vegan.
Uh-huh.
And his wife is vegan.
That's awesome.
And I think for me, the maybe the hummus is a kind of a symbol of how life should be,
mm.
in that Jews and Muslims are friends, and we have each other over for dinner and have great conversations. It definitely doesn't hurt that he and his wife are also vegan, which is just sheer coincidence. But I think that's the best way to eat it, really, is you know, with nice people and you know, in that kind of environment. So
yeah,
that's my hummus story.
I love it. That's so beautiful. Michael, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'll look forward to hearing the the parts that you cut out.
I don't think there will be any.
All right, great.
Welcome back. I am still blown away by this episode. There's so much to learn here. I know this episode, for both myself and you, my listeners, is one we'll turn back to again and again. Links to keep up with Michael and Treeline Cheese, as well as various organizations mentioned in this episode, can be found in the show notes. Check out treelinecheese.com, follow Treeline on Facebook at Treeline Cheese, and on Instagram at treeline_cheese. I hope you found this episode helpful and inspiring. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're loving it, please give Did You Bring the Hummus a 5-star rating and leave a review. It's an easy way to keep supporting the show. Be sure to share these episodes with your friends. If you're finding something good here, they will too. If you're a vegan or know a vegan who would be a great fit for the podcast, follow the Be a Guest link in the show notes. Fill out the quiz and I'll be in touch. Don't forget about that freebie on my website. Sign up for my mailing list and get a PDF of 3 pretty awesome vegan recipes. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Did You Bring the Hummus? And visit my website, didyoubringthehummus.com, for more information about me, updates on what I'm working on, new podcast episodes, and all things vegan. Finally, I would love to hear from you. What do you need help with? Is there a topic you want to hear covered on a future episode? DM me on Instagram or send me an email at didyoubringthehummus@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.